commercially viable space exploration seeming closer than ever, it's easy to let your imagination run wild as to the possibilities. But despite first landing on the moon almost 50 years ago, there are still inherent dangers to consider in being the first passengers on a commercial shuttle. Joining us now from the Space Life Sciences Committee of the Australasian Society of Aerospace Medicine is Rowena Christensen. Good morning.
Good morning.
What are the biggest dangers still present in sending people to space?
Well, I think that there's probably dangers at all phases of sending somebody up in a small spacecraft to 100 kilometres above the Earth. And we have to think about the going up phase and the coming down phase and what happens in the middle. And, of course, you're going up in a very high-powered jet engine, and we've seen lots of disasters with that in the past. So there are also things that we're not sure about which would happen with normal people if we send them up into space, how they're going to manage the stresses on their body. And, of course, when you're coming down, that's also a very dangerous phase, and landing safely.
Now, when we talk about commercial spaceflight, we're not speaking of, you know, 6 months trips in the International Space Station. You know, something like Virgin Galactic's, you know, $250,000 flight only really lasts a couple of hours. It's sort of a bit of a short thrill. Is that the kind of thing that people really need to be, you know, extra physically, mentally prepared for? If it's just kind of like a fun, you know, fun park ride.
Well, I guess we'd probably like to think not, that it's just something we can sign up one day and travel the next. But the true answer probably lies somewhere in between the two, that you can probably get away with less training, but people do need to be, I guess, prepared for what's going to happen to them. And they need to be prepared for the very strong G-forces and the possibility that they might start to grey out or black out when they're going up and going down. And also just what happens to them when they do get into that microgravity environment. So are they going to be sick? Are they going to be terrified? Are they going to obey the orders to go back to their seat when they're told to do so? And I guess the age-old thing that nobody talks about, what if they need to go to the toilet in space? What happens then?
Well, thanks to pop culture, I think we've all seen, you know, sort of the training and the physical undertaking that you know, somewhat that astronauts go through, but maybe don't understand why that's there. What are some of the most important physical attributes that astronauts have in the past needed to have?
Well, I think you've hit on a very important point, and certainly at the moment only the fittest and healthiest people actually get to be astronauts, and they're people who've often been training all their life really to get to the position where in their probably 40s for a lot of them, they actually get up to go into the International Space Station. So they've done tertiary education in science, engineering, medicine. A lot of them have been jet pilots in the military. And then when they actually train to go up into space, they spend hours and hours and hours sitting in a classroom learning everything that they need to do about not only the physics and the engineering of going up into space, but also the medical side. And they have to get to know every single little piece of the International Space Station and how it works. So it's a very, very long and complex training process.
Now, one of the key differences, again, there between that version of space exploration, the kind of professional, you know, space ventures and commercial ones, is that, you know, for professionals, NASA, for example, as one organization, is investing in them. Now, they need to make sure that these professional astronauts are fully trained and they're capable and they know what they're doing. The difference with commercial flight is that, well, I'm, you know, for example, spending the money. I only need to be as ready as I think I'm ready to be. The onus is then less on these other organizations to make sure I'm prepared. I mean, are they even quite comparable, these two different versions of space travel?
They're probably not on the biggest scale, but I think certainly at the basic level, there should be criteria which everybody has to pass in order to be certified or signed off as being somebody who's safe to go up into space. And I guess one of the problems at the moment is that there is minimal regulation. There's just some very basic government standards in America about things like safety training, but as to medical standards for commercial space travellers, there are no uniform standards. So it would be left up to the commercial providers to decide. And I guess always in these kind of frontier type commercial ventures, there's the risk that commercial avarice will overcome the need for regulation and safety. So I think that balance is a little bit untested at present.
We're speaking with Rowena Christensen from the Space Life Sciences Committee of the Australasian Society of Aerospace Medicine. Now, as you said, it's sort of a, you know, a almost Wild West style, you know, frontier style commercial venture, but it has had dangers and problems and accidents in the development. Do you think that these inherent dangers will damage the commercial viability of these programs?
I'm not sure they will, because people are still very much in love with the idea of going into space, and it's something that's very exciting. And there are still a lot of people from the baby boomer era who grew up with the Apollo program, and probably most of them wanted to be astronauts when they were kids. So it's still an incredibly romantic ideal that you would personally be able to go up and experience what it's like to be in space, even if you can't be an astronaut. So I think from that point of view, the market is still there, but certainly setbacks like the Virgin Galactic crash has certainly delayed being able to do this. And I was having a look through the ABC News website a couple of days ago and just searching for space tourism, and I've found articles going back as far as 2001 saying space tourism is now a thing. So it's something which is certainly moving very slowly, and those setbacks have demonstrated the need to move slowly, I think.
Now, on a more personal level, I'm really keen to get put in a can and shot up into space if it ever becomes, you know, economically viable. Rowena, you've done, you know, plenty of research into this concept and you know, the idea of heading into space and living in space. Are you interested at all in getting on one of those Virgin Galactic flights, for example?
Oh, absolutely. I would love to. I wanted to be an astronaut when I was a kid, and sort of bitterly disappointed to find out we didn't even have a space program. So definitely I would love to be up there and have the thrill of experiencing that even for a short time. It would really, I think, cap off a lifetime of longing from my point of view.
Well, Rena, that's a wonderful note to leave it on. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Rowena Christensen from the Space Life Sciences Committee of the Australasian Society of Aerospace Medicine, speaking there about space tourism.